Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So, okay.
Where are you from?
New York. New York City. I came down here about 12 years ago.
Yeah. You've been in Atlanta that long?
Yeah.
You've been in Atlanta?
Yeah, 73.
What have you been doing all these
years? Teaching at Tech.
Oh, teaching?
Yeah.
He teaches at Tech. He teaches at Georgia Tech.
So what subject did you teach?
American history.
American
history. But history.
But you're taking this course at Georgia State.
Oh, no, no. This is not a course. This is a book that I'm working on.
Oh, he's working on a book.
Huh?
He is working on a book.
Yeah.
And he teaches at Georgia Tech.
Well, what's the subject matter of your book?
Well, it's a study of race relations in Atlanta, 20th century race relations. And, of course, I'm trying to interview as many people as I can who were prominent in the 30s and 40s and 50s and so on. So as I spoke to John Calhoun already, Robert Thompson, quite a few people like that. So. Anyway, we can, I guess, get...
Where did you go to school?
University of Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
University of Pennsylvania.
No, I started to go there. When I finished high school.
Oh, yeah?
It was one of the universities that my father and I talked about. Well, we talked about Harvard and Yale and Dartmouth, Minnesota.
Yeah, good schools.
We talked about a lot of them before I finally decided to pick out Brown.
Excellent.
And I happened to pick out Brown because I was a Baptist. And my father and I found out that Brown was a Baptist school. My father was chairman of the board of trustees of a bank in Washington, D.C. And we therefore were church people. He encouraged us to be church-minded.
I didn't realize Brown was Baptist. That's interesting.
And although he did not instill it into you, yet he talked about church so much that you naturally...
Not sure.
...got interested in it. But when I picked out of college, and he found out that Brown was a Baptist school, was the college established by the Baptists. He went into the history of it. He said to me, well, there wasn't anything in Brown's history to make me think it was going to be a religious college.
No, I don't think so.
So I was not disturbed by that. But the fact that it was a Baptist school, established by the Baptists in their endeavor to build a university connected with the church, like most of the universities in the United States at that time were church-connected schools, like was Harvard.
Except University of Pennsylvania, it was not.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, yeah, it was too, that's right. I could tell you, talk to you more about Pennsylvania than maybe I should. But I thought about Pennsylvania a lot.
It's good school.
And once I determined to go to Pennsylvania, but I finally didn't. I'm a Washingtonian.
Oh, you're from Washington.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. My father was a high school teacher. Father taught art in the high school. Mm-hmm. And when he finished normal school, got an appointment in the Washington public school system and assigned to MC High School as a teacher. And I went to MC High School. And which later changed its name and condition to Dunbar High School, which is the name now, Dunbar, after Paul Lawrence Dunbar.
Did you come down here as soon as you finished the
name? I went back to New York and taught a few years there, St. John's University. Yeah, okay. And then I came down.
I thought about all the universities in New York, too. I started them, too, and wondered whether I should go there to school.
I think you made a good choice with Brown. It's good school.
But I finally picked that Morehouse school in Atlanta. And I came down here to go to Morehouse. I didn't know anything about it. I happened to learn about the president. But I knew the president was well trained. But I knew how the school was a small school. Didn't have a tremendous student body, nor a tremendous faculty for that matter. But I thought maybe I would come down here tomorrow and try my luck.
I guess your luck was good.
Anyway.
It is.
And I found has to be a pretty good school. As schools go, although it didn't have a tremendous faculty that I wanted to study with. But it had the...
That's the last part of it.
That's the last part. But as you get your information, then you write the book, don't you?
As I write it, I think of the title.
Well, what was it particularly that you wanted him to tell you about?
I was curious, first of all, about your years at the Citizens Trust Bank. And
about what?
About the Citizens Trust.
About the Citizens Trust when you were president.
Did you hear it last night on TV?
Oh, it's not. This is
the one. These people, Southern Bell.
Oh, I saw the little
offer
on newspaper.
Yeah. Southern Bell had a big part in the
program. Right, I saw Calhoun and who else was there? I saw a whole bunch of people.
From the different people who are outlined in the calendar. They took out standing.
That's very nice of Southern Bell to look at
the calendar. Yeah, there's Alonzo Herndon.
I want to speak to him sometime.
And then Jesse Hill.
If he has any time, he's so busy.
Yeah, he's in...
here you are. Good picture.
And his partner, Mr. Yankee, they started these, a chain of drugstores. They had 5 drugstores.
Now, Mr. Yates was there last night, too, wasn't he?
No, Mr. Yates was there.
Oh, I thought
I'd seen
him.
But his wife was there.
Okay.
We fired the lot at 5 and 9
drugstores.
We were at 9 drugstores.
What?
5, you started out with 1 and got to 5, but they were in existence for 50 years before
Yates died. Yates
didn't have 8 years.
I guess I saw his name. I guess everybody else was right.
That's right. Yeah. And then you see in the meanwhile, he started Citizens Trust Company, and Gates took over Gates and Milton Stores. And they operated that way all through the 50 years of the operating. Now he's been retired now since 71.
I was wondering about, in terms of Citizens Trust, your help, the bank's help in providing mortgages for blacks moving to the West Side. Were you very involved in providing mortgage loans?
We did some, but I did not start out to be a mortgage bank. I told them to start out with, do not look upon Citizens Trust Company now as being a company to which you can come and get money and build all kind of houses. I said, we're not going to go into the house financing business. So I started out by telling everybody that.
So who was providing the mortgage money then?
Huh?
Who was providing the mortgage money? What was there another bank that was involved?
Yeah, Georgia Savings Bank. Georgia Savings Bank happened to be biggest mortgage lender to Negroes and the kind of houses they bought and built. They were usually not expensive houses. So that Georgia Savings Bank was used to identify with the low risk Negro and his house.
And that was a black run bank?
And his house was cut.
Georgia Savings up there, you know, Peachtree.
Georgia Savings?
Georgia was on Peachtree
or
beside Street uptown.
Georgia Savings, that is Peachtree and Auburn.
And
what's
that short street that runs into Auburn? Was it
Cone
Street? That's where Georgia's Savings Bank, yeah. It was there at Peachtree and Cone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you come down Auburn Avenue, we'll go up Auburn Avenue. You run into it at Peachtree Street.
That's right. Right there at the junction light. Okay. It's just below the flat where the old Flatiron building was.
Oh, I know where that is.
You know where that is. Yeah.
And that was then?
That was the Georgia Savings Bank.
And that was a white or?
Oh, white, of course. Surely.
Why were they involved in the black mortgage market, though? Just to make money, I guess. But,
sure.
Yeah.
And I guess they let them have it easier than the First National or Fourth National or Citizens Trust.
Well, the bigger banks didn't make any mortgage loans.
Yeah. No, the bigger banks, they didn't bother with that.
And when I got into the banking business, I let it be known all around that we were not going to be a real estate bank. So they didn't try to make us one.
How about Atlanta Federal?
Atlanta Federal was started after Georgia State wanted it. Atlanta Federal.
Okay. Yeah, they're the Savings and Loan Association.
Yeah, they're Savings and Loan.
Okay. Name it later.
Yeah.
And how about John Childs of the Trust Company? Was he involved in...
Trust Company Georgia, they didn't borrow
as much. Oh, Trust Company Georgia didn't.
No.
They didn't have many Negro customers.
No, Trust Company Georgia didn't borrow
as much. And didn't borrow as much as real estate loans.
No. I guess Atlanta Federal, Georgia Savings, I guess they had more black customers.
Oh, yes, Georgia, they started off first, and they had more blacks than anyone. And I think the banks could get money.
They had more black depositors than any bank when I got the town.
Even more than Citizens Trust.
Oh, they had...
when he got to town.
Oh, so you got to town before it was really,
that's right.
Yeah.
They had gotten their customers before he came to town.
Okay.
Because when I got to town and started running the bank, course, I got the Negroes. I didn't have to fight them to make them come.
Yeah. Did you find most blacks came over to the Citizens Trust Bank?
Yeah.
Once it was started?
That's right.
But they still weren't getting mortgage money from the Citizens
Trust
Bank.
Yeah,
that's right.
No mortgage money.
Well, I wasn't the mortgage bank.
Yeah.
And I didn't intend to be.
Okay. Okay, I was also interested in the development of Crestwood Forest.
Now he wants to talk about this area out here that he developed. Mm-hmm. There's 5 men, Ewan, Williamson, Cameron, and Yates, and Mr. Powell. There were 5 men who brought up all this land out
here. We bought most of this land from white folks.
Yeah.
Poor white folks. All out here.
Now they knew they were selling to blacks. There was no intermediary at all. They knew they were selling the land to blacks.
To these 5 black men.
Who was it? Yates, Powell, Cannon.
Williamson.
Yeah. He was the only real estate man in this situation.
Yeah, I saw his name.
But he was with us. And he was a good man. He died last year.
Yeah, I know. I was interviewed, as a matter of fact. And, it was just after I spoke to Robert Thompson. He gave me his name, too.
Yeah.
But then he was in the hospital.
That's right.
In terms of developing Crestwood Forest, was it opposed by whites in this area? Who was in this area before?
Nobody. It's vacant land.
Okay.
How many acres? Do you remember how many acres you all bought?
Huh?
Do you remember how many acres you bought from your first
time? Oh, Lord, I don't know. We had so much land.
Yeah.
We owned practically
nothing.
Everything this side of High Tide.
It was just this thinking. They were willing to sell just for a good price, I guess, huh?
Anything they could get, they were willing to sell. Because
there's nobody out looking for land like this was.
As
soon
as they had to
dig
out, they had to have the streets cut and lights put in. Who helped with that? Williamson was a real estate man, so he was very instrumental in getting all that detailed done, but they needed it on that long.
And so I tell you one thing, we were 5 good men.
Yeah.
Men of education, men of background, men of character. Mm-hmm. And whatever you told the white folks we would do, we did. So they never had to worry about dealing with us. Because we were an outstanding group of Negroes. I guess they had never seen Negroes like us before.
Well, they had nothing to lose if you're paying them for the land anyway.
That's right.
How about the city? Were they involved in this at all in terms of...
you got restricted covenant. Right. They went to the city and told them they wanted no apartments, no businesses, no stores, strictly a residential section.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, no stores were to be open.
And we weren't going to let any crime start us. Get any property in the neighborhood.
And who, let's say, that was during Hartsfield administration, I guess. Was that before?
It was before Hartsfield. Hartsfield was there so long.
I guess it was Key before Hartsfield.
Yeah.
Hartsfield was in, so he was in since the 30s.
Yeah, that's true. I guess Hartsfield ran about 4 times at 4 turns, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Hartsfield was the
mayor. And there was no objection then from the city about black expansion?
No, Hartsfield wasn't there, of course. He was very favorable to us.
Yeah, Hartsfield was the
mayor. Okay.
And after him came
Allen. At the Hartsfield?
Who was
that? You know him.
Ivan Allen.
Yeah, Ivan Allen.
And then who asked that? Ivan Allen was this other
one. Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle.
Was the...
Because Ivan Allen was good man.
Yeah.
Well, he was mayor too. We didn't have to worry about him because he wanted to see Negroes improve themselves in the city.
Why?
And Tipton Trust Company was a good wheel around which we got Negroes to operate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was Alan, why did Alan want to see blacks improve themselves? Just because the goodness of his heart? Or?
Well, and then the blacks supported Alan so
very
hard. And
they made the border out of an Alan. Have them get elected.
Was the plan to buy up Prescott Forest, was that part of a general plan to expand black residential areas at all?
Well, I don't know about expanding, because they had over 400 acres among themselves when the school was on.
Okay.
And they wanted to get that off of their hands first before they started expanding.
Now, we were not after selling real estate.
No, they were just developing this area.
We were trying our best to acquire the financial and real estate status that we wanted to establish. The Negroes had been moving from the north side to the east side. And before we started buying into this section.
They were pushing them from the northeast side over on this side, you see, which is the northwest. And they were, and see, you remember how they were, because we lived over on America and in the northeast section 33 years before we built this house. And see, we were out there near London, constantly on North Avenue, all that and that stuff. And our home that we built is the only home that's standing out there now.
Yeah.
In the Bedford area district.
Robert Thompson showed me this report that had been done in 1947 about certain areas that blacks would expand into.
Yeah.
I'm just curious whether Crestwood Forest is one of those.
In the
40s? 47.
Well, I guess it was beginning to come out this way.
Who's that?
This was a report, 1947. I think it was done by the Atlanta Housing Council.
Yeah, I guess.
Picking out six expansion areas that they were
moving into. Yeah. Well, you see, there was a time, you see, when you took a minute, hardly went any further than Ashby Street. And then it began to go further and further and further, a little bit more, added to it. It had gotten up here to Hightower, I guess, and that's when the Indians decided to develop this area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we started to buy all out here where we knew poor white folks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes,
he ran
them out.
This was vacant.
Yes.
But poor white folks owned the houses and had been owning them and living out here undisturbed for years and years and years. I don't know how many years they've been developing this.
So except for poor white, the area was pretty much...
That's right. It's all poor white down here.
And they were just glad to be selling out.
That's right.
They didn't care about being sold. I guess you gave him good money for the house, of course, I suppose.
Well, I don't know about the good money. You all didn't, when you, these few whites that were left out here, I don't know that you all paid them so much money. No, they just up and moved the minute the Negro starts coming out.
Well, they didn't bother. Most of them didn't bother much.
They
didn't bother. We moved, bought in their houses. And told them that we were buying him, and they just told other white folks that they gave them our name. And other white folks called us in to see by buying their houses. So the white folks who left out here really helped us survive this problem.
So they might. Okay.
They didn't fight us or get mad with us.
No, this time, I guess.
No, they were about to give up ghosts and run somewhere else instead.
Yeah. Okay, I was also curious about the National Development Company. I think you were.
National Development.
Yeah. I came across a few agreements that National Development Company made with the city about stopping at certain points and agreeing to certain buffers. And I was curious about why the black community would agree to those types of things.
We made our business to make good with governments. Mm-hmm. We got in good with the city governments. We did that to start off with. Because we wanted the city government to be with us.
That project.
Yeah. So you don't want the city government to oppose you, so...
That's
you...
right. So they started to get into the city government.
So you
and the city government went along with us, too.
Now, why did they do that?
Mm.
Why would the city be agreeable to going along?
Well, I guess they didn't have a reason not to.
Well, I guess it wasn't popular with the whites in town.
No, the whites didn't want it.
Yeah.
They didn't. They weren't asking anything, so they just wanted to let them have it.
Okay.
And the land was a land that I should say was potentially a build. That's why we got incident in this thing.
That's right, because just here, nobody wants it. They would like to get rid of it. Okay. There's no buyer for it, so the land is just laying here.
Yeah.
And the white people who lived in this section, they weren't mad with anybody.
No.
They weren't even mad with us. For coming to buy their property.
Well, they were poor people, and they had no reason to argue or anything about it. Anybody came along, wanted them, giving them a little money, they were ready to sell it for them.
I guess there was more trouble over in areas like Peyton Forest. And,
yes, there was Peyton Forest. That trouble started later on when they started encroaching over toward Cascade and Hamilton Road.
Yeah.
That's when the trouble started, you see. But they had already started this section over here, and they were moving further and further. And then when they got to Peyton Road, see, that's when the trouble started. See, Ivan Allen was in office,
right.
And then the Peyton Allen, Peyton Road.
So sort of the whites made a stand, or tried to make a stand at that point.
That's it. And then you see gradually, you won't find hardly a white living in that area now. From all the way from here to Campbellton Road.
Really?
You won't hardly know. And you'd be surprised if the Negroes, they didn't go in written houses. They bought those homes. To ride through there is just a strange, just beautiful.
Yeah, I've been talking to them.
Yeah.
It's very pretty. Okay. So I'll say, in terms of agreements with the city, let's say in Collier Heights area, agreements between the National Development Company and the city in Collier Heights. This was all done to get the city to agree, or at least not to bother you when you began buying land.
That's
there.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't ask them to help us, but we asked them not to get mad at us and fight us. We didn't want that to develop.
Right, of course. Were you worried about violence at all in these areas, from the whites, any place? So was that one of the considerations?
No, they didn't refuse anything. I don't think the whites did.
What's that?
The whites didn't refuse to sell.
No,
they didn't refuse to sell.
The whites used to send out the whites to us.
Yeah, that's right.
When we started buying out here and paying for the property, the white people got to know that we had money.
And
the fact that we had money made them like us more and more. Because they knew when they dealt with us, we were going to get their money.
Yeah, but we're on somewhere else.
But yet there were certain barriers set up. And
they tried to tried to start those barriers, you know, but it didn't hold out.
Why? What was it?
You see, all those barriers out there beyond Peyton Road and all out in Cascade and Hamilton Road and all those homes and streets that ran into it, they tried to, but eventually everything had to give it up.
When I woke and looked out, Negroes had moved all the way to Decatur. Negroes had bought all the way to Decatur.
I got the feeling that if the blacks met resistance, they sort of jumped over the areas and moved further on.
No, they didn't jump over. They just pushed the whites out. Yeah, that's what they did. They pushed them out.
Well, we didn't fight them at all.
We just
bought them out. The white people didn't know that Negroes were buying all this property.
Sure.
There are two Negroes who are buying all this property.
How about, I was also curious about highways and access roads being used as barriers. I come across that I-20. Had been used as a dividing line originally, or supposed to be used as a dividing line.
What is the dividing line?
I-20.
That expressway I-20 was supposed to have been the divide, but it didn't hold up.
Why didn't it hold up?
I don't know, I guess.
Well, I tell you, off and on in the past, dividing lines have been mutually agreed on.
Yeah.
I remember when we started to buy out there. We agreed to buy off Cotty Road. Cotty Road was the street that we used coming into this section.
Oh, Cotty Road.
And we bought everything around Cotty Road.
So, in Cotty Heist and Cotty Road was the dividing line.
That's right.
But that didn't hold at all.
No, it didn't hold.
And it didn't hold because whites were willing to sell and blacks needed the land.
That's right.
Okay. Now, did the city try to hold those lines at all?
I don't think the city tried to hold them, did they? The city didn't try to hold those boundary lines, did they?
No, we never fought over those boundary lines.
No,
the city never fought to establish them or to firm any boundary lines. We never had any understanding that they were ever going to do that either.
So they never tried to...
No.
Well, there was no legal way of, I guess.
No legal way, and they didn't try to establish any legal way
to... We started coming out of Simpson, and Simpson changed to Cotty Road to Hightower.
That's right.
See?
Yeah, okay.
So that Negroes, we came to the west side. Negroes were filled up the west side. And we came out Hunter Street, and then out Simpson Street, and Simpson Street became Collier Road, and we just followed that as our line of punch.
Simpson to Collier Road.
And white people lived in little houses all around everywhere. Off to the right and left of Collier Road, largely to the right of Collier Road.
I guess by that time the white city government would have been afraid of black votes. I mean, they would have been afraid of the Kaiser and the blacks. I mean, by the late 40s, early 50s, there was a good registration building.
Yes, they started getting them registered all right. And we're voting, you know.
Okay, let me see.
One thing, we had money, and we could get money.
Right.
And the white people uptown knew that we had money and could get it.
Could get it from,
And see, so that by that time, Cecil Strutt was financing money, lending the Negroes money.
Oh, okay, well, yeah, that's curious. At what point did Citizens Trust begin to lend for mortgages?
Well, not mortgages, but they were just... You see, the banks of town wouldn't lend the Negroes any money. And they'd go around Citizens Trust would lend them money.
Just what, money for starting businesses, you mean?
Anything they wanted.
I tell you what, we started lending money to Negroes for any purpose.
Well, except mortgages.
Except mortgages. But they built up the patronage of Negroes in lending.
Yeah.
That was outstanding. Every Negro that borrowed from us paid us.
How about somebody who, how about a developer who wanted to buy land? That you wouldn't lend him money for that either, then? Some sort of black developer who wanted to buy a tract of land? Was there money available for that type of lending? Let's say there was, let's say the people who bought Crestwood Forest, which was yourself, did that money come from just yourselves, or did you borrow from Citizens Trust, or?
Our money came, first of all, from ourselves, because I had saved my money all my life, because I'd been taught to save my money.
Mm-hmm.
So that I had some money, and he had money. He had made and saved. And we started out working in the bank together. And working in the bank together, our heads got locked on this matter of money and finance. And we got associated as partners to start off with. And we remained partners until he died.
There was no point in that Citizens Trust stepped in with mortgage money at all?
Oh, no, Citizens Trust Company did not give us him in that and throw us a lot of money to spend out here.
So they never got involved in that type of...
No, we didn't depend on Citizens. We weren't going to do that. We weren't going to let the white folks say that Negroes got a bank now and they're going to raise hell.
How about Atlanta Life? Were they involved in any kind of lending?
Huh?
Atlanta Life Insurance, were they involved in any kind of lending of money for mortgages or anything else?
Well, we did a little mortgage lending, but not much. As I told you,
yeah,
we let it be understood that we were not going to be a hellhole, saving them in the money business. And we went starting to the trust company to make a pool of money for them to play with. You know, I was head of Citizens Trust Company, and when I got the head of Citizens Trust Company, they knew that they had a tough man. When I built Citizens Trust Company as a bank.
So most of the mortgage money then, I would guess, came from the white banks, came from...
That's right.
Atlanta Savings, came, I guess, from Trust Company later on. And what, Georgia Federal?
And then the Federal Savings and Loan Association started, because they started making a lot of Negro mortgage loans.
This is all after World War II.
Oh, they loaned Negroes money. Yeah.
How about originally when Heman Perry was, when Heman Perry was developing this area, where did the mortgage money come from then?
Heman E. Perry was like his daddy. The daddy of Negro development in this town.
He funded mortgages, didn't he?
He built Standard Life Insurance Company. That was a powerful Negro insurance company. It had money and had insurance and had good risk. He built that company in outstanding.
But were they involved in the mortgage business too? Mm. Were they involved in the mortgage business?
No, he didn't. He never got Standard Life deep in the mortgage business. They made some mortgage loans.
Yeah. But not too many. Okay, so back in the 20s then, who was the main lender for black mortgages, I guess, back then?
Well, still at Georgia Bank.
Still at Atlanta Savings?
Sure. Okay.
In fact,
he wanted to know who were the main people that let him have the money, so I told George to take savings.
Okay.
Yeah, the Georgia Savings Bank hardly ever turned down a Negro that asked for mortgage money.
That's surprising back then, I think, you know. I said that seems surprising to me back then because it struck me that the whites wouldn't give two hoots about what the blacks were doing.
Well, As I said, the class of white people that ran that Georgia State thing, they were of the same caliber as First National and Citizens Silver and all that. I imagine they were, as you said, might say middle class.
The boys that ran the Georgia State thing were not any of the high class.
No,
class.
They weren't any of the high class. Bankers, you see, like, First National and CNS and Trust Company in Georgia, they weren't white people of that caliber.
So they needed the business, I guess, then?
Sure, they needed the business. They were asking the dollar.
Who ran that? You know who ran that bank during this
time? Well, I used to know. I've forgotten his name. Hadn't you, Dad, the Georgia Saving?
I forgot. I used to know their names well.
That's right.
I used to know them and meet them on the street.
Well, I could find that out.
Oh, you can find that out easily.
I was also curious about whether there was any attempt at any time to develop an integrated bank.
Oh, no, all this integration just started they weren't trying to integrate.
No
effort at all. This thing, we were separate.
Yeah.
Yeah. They weren't trying to integrate.
Okay, I got the feeling that some of the white homeowners associations in the Southwest were making a small attempt to integrate, but then they just were overwhelmed.
Oh, yes.
The Southwest Alliance for Progress.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then they started on a small scale, you know, with the effort, you know, to integrate. And see, all this integration just gradually got into existence.
Yeah.
And you see, especially since Martin Luther, you see, pushed it and everything. That was the biggest thing. And then they took up the few where he left off. But there was no great big drive to integrate. They just went at this thing as it came up and down along and then fought to see. Now last night, Mr. Sessions introduced the Holmes family, you know, and this Charlotte Hunter and down at the University of Georgia. They were the first family that he had the relatives come up. And he took each relative and explained what they had done and how they got integration started. Now you see, it really, that integration took leaps and bounds when Hamilton Holmes and Charlene Hummer went to Georgia. That was the first step towards this integration scene. And then that's when the lawyers stepped in there and fought it. Now, Donald Hollowell, whom they presented last night, he was a big figure in getting Charlene and Hamilton Holmes into the University of Georgia. But that's the thing that really stirred things up, you see. The way they treated Charlene and Hamilton Holmes down at the University.
Yeah, that's where they made a big mistake.
Yeah, that's where.
See, when they first went down there, applied for admission. Beat them and everything else.
And
that was a big mistake they made.
That was where all this integration started.
I was curious about the integration in the neighbors themselves, though.
Whites
just ran away, I guess.
Yeah, they just ran. Niggas moved the whites gone. And so that was, they went bombed by. And then a few said they weren't going, and a few just remained for a while, you see, until they got themselves together to go to something better.
Integration was never a hard thing for us. I'll tell you. It's not something that you can really dig in and turn up locks and ends and things we did. We were clean Negroes. And we didn't have any idea of just running white folks out of this neighborhood in order to get some land to play with. When we bought their homes, to sell them to Negroes.
Right.
That's right. And they understood it that way.
Right.
with all this immigration stuff, that's what they started. They had out
of home. Yeah, that's the University of Georgia started all that stuff.
Yeah, that started.
I mean, they made the start.
Right. In the state, right.
But when they treated Alvin Holmes and that girl, when they went down to Georgia to register, Lord have mercy. The way they treated them was a thing that started Negroes fighting for the right way up.
That's right.
And then Charlie turned out and married one of those
white
boys down there. That was enough.
Well, that's a choice, I guess.
Yeah. That was something else they had to digest. Oh, mercy. And then Charlie left Georgia and went on to New York and went to play the field. Went on up there to the big newspapers in New York and got jobs.
She became pretty prominent by that. Yeah.
She did. Yeah. She put herself right on my big old up in the top.
And she has a lot of guts, I'll say that.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're telling me.
One other thing on the neighborhood. When these areas became black areas, was there any attempt by the transit services in this town to extend service to the black areas? Any trouble along those lines?
No, most of the Negroes that bought out here didn't want all that transit coming by their doors.
No, some must have wanted the streetcars coming out.
Yeah, they finally mapped out a route that would go around this way and that way and everything. They finally, and now there's the buses and MARA. They have a route that winds in and winds out, but just running a regular bus line across here, that doesn't make sense.
Did the transit companies try to run a route that bypassed the black areas and served the white ones that was still
there? No, nobody didn't mean to wipe them out.
So they just...